Good evening, men. We're going to get started tonight. We're hitting you with a little tag team from the men's ministry department. Dennis is going to be sharing his story today, and then I'm going to come back with the teaching. So without further ado, let's have Dennis Carroll come up and share his story.
That's right. Well, thank you. I am Dennis Carroll, and this is my story. We're going to try to do 60 years and 30 minutes. So here we go. I was born in Northeast New Jersey to Ed and Barbara Carroll in 1959. I have an older brother, an older sister, a younger brother, and a younger sister. My parents grew up during the Depression, and they knew how to work hard. They were both the only kids in their respective families to graduate from college. My dad, Edward, graduated from an elite Jesuit university in New York City with a degree in accounting, and he went on to become a financial controller for a nationwide construction company based in Birmingham, Michigan. My mom, Barbara, graduated in dental hygiene and taught on the faculty of Columbia University for several years. She gave up that career to become a full-time mom and a part-time hygienist. And we're really glad she did. My parents were faithful Catholics, and both of their families were Catholic as far back as we know. We attended Mass every Sunday. I attended Catholic school for 8 years. I took a lot of pride in being Catholic, and at a time in society when society was becoming more liberal and more unkempt and shaggy looking, we Catholic kids look pretty impressive with our starched uniforms, short hair, and disciplined behavior. But growing up, things conspired to shake my faith. As a kid, I learned a lot by observation, and I became aware that my religion and that of my friends was mostly just an outward show. And although my parents took their devotion to Catholicism seriously, we never talked about our faith in the home. At all. Once a year, my father or my mother would offer a prayer over Thanksgiving dinner, and that was the extent of any praying in our home. Again, we never talked about church history, doctrine, anything religious. I think the closest we came was praying that Notre Dame would score a touchdown. Also, I grew up believing and again, this is in the context of things that were starting to shake my faith. I actually grew up believing in the creation story of the Bible and that it was true. My faith was rattled quite a bit when my brother, when he started Catholic high school, and I discovered that they were teaching evolution at the high school level. Other observations were also conspiring to shake my faith. For example, it really bothered me that I had to confess my sins to a priest. Why not directly to God? It wasn't long before I was lying to the priest about my sins. And in religion class, I remember thinking, as we were studying the Old Testament and the Exodus and so forth, I remember thinking Moses and the Israelites were expected to structure their entire lives around God and obeying him. I thought, wow, I'm sure glad we don't do it that way anymore. But even that kind of bothered me. In seventh grade, another incident really rattled me. I remember going to the birthday party of one of my Catholic classmates. It was a normal party, but afterwards, some of my classmates were whispering about going to the basement and whether I should be allowed to join them in the basement. Reluctantly, they let me go, and when I got down the basement, I couldn't believe my eyes. The entire basement, all the walls were wallpapered in Playboy centerfolds. Turns out my classmate's father was a photographer for Playboy magazine, and he was displaying his work. I knew this was wrong, and I thought, how could this be? How could a member of our church be employed in the porn industry? One other event that seemed to be a turning point in my faith occurred when I was just goofing around. I used to like to build model boats and rockets and airplanes and tanks and things. And usually I would build firecrackers into the models. with the intent that I was going to set them on fire and watch them blow up. And so one time I was doing this. I couldn't usually get away with this at home, so I was in a woods right adjacent to my home. And it was a nice autumn day, and I had a couple fighter planes, and I lit them on fire and threw them up in the air as high as I could, and they exploded, and burning plastic flew everywhere. And I didn't think much of it, and after a few minutes, I noticed some smoke on the ground here and there, but I never saw any flames. But after about 10 minutes, there was a big ring of smoke traveling in all directions, and eventually I started seeing flames. And it was at that time, let me just get caught up here. At that time, I prayed the most heartfelt prayer that I had ever prayed to God that I can recall. And it was like this: God, if you will cause a cloudburst on this woodlot and put this fire out, I will be good the rest of my life. Well, God might have gotten a chuckle out of that, but he did not answer the prayer the way I wanted. So I had to run home, tell my mom. She called the fire department, and they handled the fire. But my takeaway from that was, wow, so much for God. What good is he? He won't even answer the sincere prayer of a desperate 12-year-old. At the same time my moral foundation was getting shaken, the country as a whole was going through a very tumultuous time. Here is a quick snapshot of some of the things that were going on in American society and around the world at a point in time where I was starting to think seriously about what I was going to do with the rest of my life and whether I was going to pursue an honest living or a devious living. And from what I saw of honest livings, they looked like a lot of work and not much fun, and I wasn't that interested in a typical career. But at the time, the Vietnam War was raging, the draft had just been started, student protests against the war and against the draft were erupting all over the country. Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated, followed shortly by the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. The Charles Manson murders were in the news on a regular basis. Cults were springing up and doing weird things. Woodstock happened. The PLO was founded. The Cold War was raging. Soviets invaded Czechoslovakia. The Chappaquiddick cover-up occurred. The My Lai Massacre. Kent State, Ohio. National Guard shooting students. Riots were happening around the country, including Detroit. And let's not forget something near and dear to my heart. Dutch elm disease was spreading around the country and wiping out trees by the millions. So American society as a whole seemed to be giving a turbo boost to my already sinful, devious, lazy nature. Another thing that influenced me was the movie industry and television. Late in the 1960s, there was a seismic shift in Hollywood regarding what was acceptable subject matter and how movies were rated. For most of Hollywood's history, as you know, the good guys were the heroes and the bad guys ended up dead or in prison. But this flip-flopped when I was a kid in the late 1960s in a big way, and now the criminals were the heroes and the authorities were the bad guys or the buffoons. One of the movies that made crime seemed really cool to me was The Sting with Robert Redford and Paul Newman. And if you haven't seen it, it was basically about a network of good crooks who scammed a lot of money out of a bad crook. But if you want to make crime look good, Robert Redford and Paul Newman are a great way to do it. On TV, there was a show that really grabbed my attention about a suave, successful thief who lived a playboy lifestyle. When he was finally caught and imprisoned, I don't know if I mentioned the name, it was called It Takes a Thief, starring Robert Wagner. When he was finally caught and imprisoned, the CIA cut a deal with him to free him in exchange for him working for the U.S. government and stealing exclusively for the government. And I thought, what a deal. The lesson I came away from that show was, if you're going to be a criminal, be the best. As traditional morality was continuing to erode, I became more and more open to the idea of pursuing a criminal lifestyle. But one thing my Catholic experience taught me was that if you were well-groomed, neatly dressed, polite, acted like a good person, you draw a lot less suspicion, and people generally give you the benefit of the doubt. I use this principle regularly as I began my criminal pursuits. In school, I started cheating regularly on tests and plagiarizing reports. Outside of school, I began shoplifting, first candy bars, toys, things like that. But then I moved up to things that really mattered to me that were age-appropriate, clothing, record albums, sporting goods, electronics, even Christmas gifts for my family. My brother Tim, who was my hero across the board, he was an amazing guy. But even my brother Tim, who played the guitar, one day showed up with a brand new expensive guitar. I asked him how he could afford that, and he confided that he had stolen it from a guitar store by walking in with an empty guitar case and walking out with this beautiful instrument. I was both shocked and impressed. I thought, wow, I need to up my game. So I went on to shoplift hundreds of items from major department stores, never once getting caught or even chased. And I can vividly remember one instance. I think this happened at the Pontiac Mall at the Hudson's there, I'm pretty sure. But I kind of had a theme song by the time I was in high school. And so I'm at the mall, and I was in the changing room. I was in the very act of stealing some things. And I also had a shopping bag with me that had other stolen merchandise in it. And as this is going on, an unusual song comes on the PA system. And this happened to be my theme song. And the lyrics went like this. I stood on a ridge and shunned religion, thinking the world was mine. I made my break and a big mistake, stealing when I should have been buying. And then the chorus goes, stealing when I should have been buying. Anyway, you can find the song on YouTube. But I still like the song. It really wasn't a song of repentance. It was a song of defiance, and it really kind of summed up my heart attitude at the time. So rather than the song convicting me of my sin, my twisted heart literally took it as a sign from God that this was what I was supposed to do with my life. Now, one other movie that took me down an even darker path as far as my fantasy life, career life, was called The Day of the Jackal. It was based on a best-selling fictional novel about an assassin who was hired to kill Charles de Gaulle, the Prime Minister of France. Now, in this movie, the hero was more like me. He was a soft-spoken, diminutive, quiet, analytical guy, very cold-hearted, and the movie was about how he meticulously planned to get away with killing Charles de Gaulle. I was fascinated by the movie, and I watched it as many times as I could. The movie was supposedly about the race to stop the assassin, but in reality, it portrayed him as this brilliant, well-paid hero figure. I began thinking, wow, if you could get paid a lot of money for shooting or blowing up someone, that would be an awesome way to make a living. I just wasn't interested in like I said, the day-to-day grind. Now, I need to pause here and say that I don't really know if I would have pursued a serious criminal lifestyle beyond what I was doing. Proverbs 1 intimates that a lot depends on your association and whether a mentor shows up in your life to help lead you down the path. But I was certainly leaning that way, and I was cold-hearted and seemed to have no conscience. When we moved to Michigan, I lost my identity in many ways, but I continued to steal, lie, cheat, and deceive people throughout my high school years. While others were experimenting with drugs and alcohol, I got a real high out of beating the system as I thought about it, or as I thought of it. And all of this while remaining a good student, well-mannered, well thought of, and even elected to be the treasurer of the National Honor Society. It was all part of the con. Worth noting, my Catholic upbringing had installed some really good truths in my heart, namely, there is a God, and I will be held accountable for my sins. And I believe that, even as a thief. But this was my plan of salvation. God is very forgiving, so I'm just going to live any way I want, and when I get really old, like 50, I'll ask God to forgive me, and he will, because God is forgiving. That was the way I viewed God and his character. During my senior year in high school, God reached in and started getting my attention. My best friend Steve started attending a Baptist church, actually Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church, and invited me to a teen volleyball night they were having. I was really impressed that these teenagers were kind and thoughtful and took a little interest in me. That just wasn't happening in my day-to-day life. I don't think there was any kind of Bible teaching at all. Maybe they probably said a prayer before playing volleyball. But that really spoke to my heart. Now, Steve, my friend, was a respected and persuasive guy in a quiet way. He also invited me and a few friends to start studying Bible prophecy instead of our usual Friday night poker games. And I think sometimes we did a little of both. A little poker, a little prophecy, smoke a cigar, have a beer. But we started doing that, and we started talking about prophecy, and it was really intriguing. Steve and I ended up rooming together our first year at Michigan State. And I was really shocked one day when a couple of upperclassmen showed up at our door and invited us to their dorm room once a week to study the Bible. I was starting to get curious about the Bible, but I was more motivated by the fact that a couple of very accomplished upperclassmen would be willing to spend any time with me at all. We met weekly, and about 3 months into regular Bible study, I really began to understand the gospel for the first time. It was actually New Year's Eve of 1977-78. I committed my life to Christ after attending a four-day Bible conference that my parents amazingly allowed me to attend called the Permanent Difference Conference, sponsored by the Navigators. I actually gave up a four-day skiing trip to go to a four-day Bible conference. My parents knew something was up. The Navigators, as some of you may know, it's an international parachurch organization. They're involved a lot in Bible study, discipleship, evangelism, and missionary outreach. During my third year at MSU, I began to figure out that I was supposed to be involved in a church, not just a parachurch. And there was one church on campus I knew of that was doing everything the Navigators were doing and more. It was called the Great Commission Church, and they had a campus group called MSU Bible Study. And they had only been on campus about 2 years, but they were making a big impact. They were led by a team of young, zealous men who had moved from Ames, Iowa, to start a church in East Lansing. Now, excuse me a minute. Is anybody keeping time? Okay. So, Imagine a church of about 250 people where everyone was between the ages of 18 and 30 and mostly single, where most everyone was actively sharing their faith at school, in the dorms, and on their jobs, where some of the young men were preaching publicly on campus, where every church member was encouraged to write their testimony and print it up as a tract they could hand out while doing personal evangelism. I think Greg, I actually still have some copies of a tract that I wrote about my life, printed that thing up 40 years ago, and hey, if you use good paper, it still hangs in there. Imagine a campus, lost my spot. So imagine a church, a college church, where on spring break, instead of going home, the students, many of them, would find another college campus that was not on spring break, and they'd spend the whole week doing evangelism on that campus while sleeping on the floors at night. That was what this church was like. I was definitely not one of the leaders, but I was one of the followers, and it was a very exciting, dynamic time in my Christian life. Let's see. It looks like I lost a page in my notes, so I'm going to wing it here. In 1985, I had to take a few years off school from MSU, but I finished my degree in 1985, and at that time, our campus church was looking to start 5 new churches around Michigan, one at Western Michigan, Eastern Michigan, University of Michigan, Central Michigan, and also Penn State University. It was an ambitious project. We had most of the churches did not have an elder even leading them. They were led by one or two deacons. And I actually volunteered to go to a church plant at Central Michigan University, where all we had were 2 deacons and their wives and about 7 kids between them. We had myself and another fellow who had just graduated, and 3 students who actually changed universities from MSU to CMU to become part of the church plant. And we had no financial backing. We were completely self-supporting, and it was quite a challenge. It was not the ideal model for starting a church, but we learned a lot, and we did make an impact on campus, but it was really not a sustainable model, especially financially. And so after about 3 years, it pretty much collapsed. But at that time, God was leading Noelle and I to get married. Noelle had also been involved in this MSU ministry, and but not at Central Michigan. She was still down in East Lansing. But so we had a chance to join another church plant in Novi, and this time they had 3 elders, several deacons, still no financial funding, but a little better organization, and that church lasted 25 years, and the interesting thing about it was the leadership never really had a vision for a permanent building. So we were 25 years, and in my life in total, 37 years as a Christian without ever having a building I could call my own. We met in middle school auditoriums and for about 20 years at the Wixom Community Center. So it became very clear to me that the church was the people, not the building. But having said that, when that church folded, we found Berean. And when I got here, people probably remember seeing me going around like this, touching things like the pews and the tables. And it's like, we have a building. We have a building. I'm so excited. We have a building. So that's not the only reason we came to Berean, but it's a nice benefit. But anyway, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. Someday I'd love to have a chance to share a little more about, things the Lord has taught me and Noel over the years. We've had a lot of struggles, but we've really seen God come through for us in so many ways. And I thank you for the opportunity to share my story. Thanks.